Today on Straight Talk Africa, the need for free, fair, and credible elections in Africa. What does it really take to hold elections that reflect the will of the people and not an outcome reflecting those who count the vote? That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Ian Bior, your social media reporter.
Today, it's a discussion on what it takes to hold a credible election in Africa whose results must reflect the will of the people.
And coming up later, our audience has weighed in on our topic through emails, Facebook, and Twitter comments, and we'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
The question is, how can one organize a credible election in Africa whose results reflect the will of the people? My colleague, Paul Sisco, has more.
Observers say the presidential contest in Kenya and Liberia will be competitive. In Rwanda and Angola, easy victories for the dominant ruling parties are expected. Rwandan President Paul Kagame has been in power since the end of the 1994 genocide. He tells supporters that his victory was ensured in 2015 when Rwandans petitioned parliament to change the constitution, allowing him to run again on August 4th and to remain in power till 2034 if he chooses to. The outcome is not in doubt. Kagame has always won by more than 90% of the vote. The government disqualified other candidates seeking the office, saying they didn't fulfill the requirements to run, such as collecting enough supporting documents. Kagame has warned Western nations against meddling in the country's election. In southern Africa, Angolan President José Eduardo dos Santos is stepping down after nearly 38 years in power. It was a surprise announcement. Dos Santos has hand-picked Defense Minister João Lourenço as his successor. Both men are from the running MPLA Popular Movement for the Liberation of Angola party, which controls the nation's economy, public media, and more. The oil giant Sonangol is run by Africa's richest woman, the president's daughter, Isabel dos Santos. Angola's oil accounts for about 45% of its gross domestic product and 95% of its exports. Kenya holds its general election on August 8th. A decade ago, disputed election results brought widespread violence in Kenya. Over 1,100 people died and thousands more were displaced. There was much less violence in 2013 after the adoption of a national constitution. That close contest was won by Uhuru Kenyatta and challenged in the Supreme Court by opposition candidate Raila Odinga. Trust in the independence of the judicial system and electoral commission is essential to the credibility of the election process. The court ruled for Kenyatta, and Odinga accepted the result. Liberia's general elections are set for October 10th. The voting will be overseen by the National Elections Commission. More than 20 candidates are vying to succeed President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf in office since winning the country's first democratic election in 2006 and re-election in 2011. The first democratic transfer of power in Liberia's modern history is largely dependent on the independence of the Liberian Supreme Court. After Liberia's 2014 special senatorial elections, more than a dozen petitions were filed in the court against the National Election Commission and various candidates. The Supreme Court dealt with those electoral disputes and appeals well into 2016. Finally, there is no official word on when presidential elections in the Democratic Republic of Congo will take place. President Joseph Kabila's term in office has been allowed to continue until late 2017 under a transition deal, as long as elections are held this year.
We still have that objective in mind.
Mr. Kabila is bound by Congo's constitution to step down at the next election, having served two consecutive terms. Congo has not experienced a peaceful transfer of power since gaining independence in 1960. But the government's finance minister has said the country is too broke to organize polls. The United States is threatening sanctions on anyone delaying the vote.
We are ready to take additional action to sanction those who stand in the way of the DRC's first democratic transition of power.
A hallmark of a democratic election is that it is conducted through a predictable and transparent process. The goal, of course, is credibility, and that's determined by a free and fair electoral process before, during, and after the vote. Paul Sisko, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. Joining us here in our Washington studios are three distinguished guests. Alhaji Benga Kaka, Nigerian Senator of Ogun State East, and the former Deputy Governor Ogun State. Javis Chondo, former Rwandan Member of Parliament and diplomat, and Arthur Lalok, Democracy Fellow, National Endowment for Democracy, and Country Director of Action Aid Uganda. Well, gentlemen, I have to say frankly that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
You're most welcome.
Thank you.
Viewers,
you're
most welcome.
You're welcome.
Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111, and the U.S. country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately, Senator Kaka. When one talks about a credible election, what do you understand by that?
Well, simply put, a credible election is that process conducted in a very transparent and open manner, in such a way that is acceptable to the generality of the people, if not to all, at least the majority.
The majority.
Right.
You come from Nigeria.
Thank you.
You regained your political independence from the British back in 1960. How often have you had an election, frankly, that meets that standard in your lifetime?
Well, not totally meeting the standard, but approximately moving towards the ideal. That's what we are striving at.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the 1957 election, I want to believe that it was credible enough.
But that was before independence?
Before independence. Then after independence, well, we have 1993 election that was acknowledged to be very free and fair.
June 12th.
The June 12th, mm-hmm, that produced MKO Abiola.
Mm-hmm.
And sincerely speaking, against all odds, everybody accepted theory. Result of the election has been very credible, and people were happy with it.
Except the generals.
Except the generals and their supporters, the cohorts.
The generals, of course, led by then President.
President Ibrahim Babangida.
Ibrahim Babangida.
Right.
Why? Why did they see it differently?
Well, it's difficult, apart from what they let the world know, it's difficult to say what is behind their mindset. There may be many things that are not known to the public up to now. And I know that with time, we will get to know. A lot of power games behind the scene. And again, some people did not want to leave power. So when they talk of democracy, lip services are paid to democracy, without actually understanding what democracy entails. And when some people don't want to leave the position of power, then they find a way of dancing around. We've heard, not only in Africa, mm-hmm, we've heard of countries whereby a prime minister would transmute into becoming president after changing the constitution. And then we have a situation where some, maybe military guys, becoming president, and fearing that their past might be haunting them, that the best thing is for them to remain permanently put in power so that there will be nobody capable of coming to look at what their past was like.
Very interesting. Javis, do you agree with the senator about the definition or his understanding, at least, of what a credible election is supposed to be?
I do agree with the senator about that definition.
That is the theory, but the practice is always something very different.
Why is that so?
You know, Shaka,
you have been a member of parliament in the past. Were you genuinely elected or were you selected?
I was elected. But generally speaking, I can tell you that power is scarce and sweet. Once you taste it, you come back for more. And that is what is going on the African continent. You will hear different president running for the third, the fourth, the fifth term. The reason they give is that if they leave power, the people of the country will die. But actually what they mean, if they relinquish power, they will die.
Why do they think like that, frankly? Because let's face it, are they in fact God's gifts to their communities or countries?
What is happening there, Shaka, during the power, the term, they commit abuse. They commit crimes along with their associate. And the best way to run away the trial or to be sent taken to books is to cling on power. And they will find different reason, motive to say that is the population of the country that want they stay there. But actually, they stay there because they want to run away from the crime they have committed. Can be blood crime, they can be economic crimes, and so on. So the best way to protect them is to stay in power.
Asa, from what you have heard, and I'm sure you probably agree that a credible election is pretty much what the two gentlemen have talked about. I mean, obviously, these individual leaders do not operate in a vacuum. They are operating in countries where there are millions and millions of people.
Yeah.
Are we talking about entire countries becoming, in fact, willing victims?
Well, really interesting framing. And I like the question you posed about is it election or selection. I think that historically, I think in the case of Africa, it has been the tension between do we have an election or we actually have a selection. I do think that the tension and the crisis we have in Africa is precisely because I think pre-colonial times, long times in history, I don't think we were familiar with the kinds of elections that we have now.
What about our cultures themselves?
Yeah, exactly. So that's where I'm coming to. And I think a credible election, just to add to what my senior colleagues have mentioned, is a product of the build-up to, the conduct of, and the outcome. And the build-up to is the area that I would want to use to respond to your question. I think the build-up to elections are really about, are citizens prepared? Are the issues clear for which we want leaders to provide leadership on? Do we vote on primordial issues, non-issues, if you will? Is the electorate prepared? I think these are fundamental questions that without resolving, it will be very difficult to have a proper conduct of, as well as acceptance of the final outcome. So I do think that culturally, there is a greater need for preparedness on the part of ordinary people, so-called voters, so that we are sure if I go to vote, this is why I am voting. This is my expectation. So in Uganda, I started an initiative with colleagues in 2008 called the Citizens Manifesto. The idea of the Citizens Manifesto, as opposed to a political party manifesto, is that ordinary people should know what they want, very clear what they want. So rather than go listen to politicians who will promise bridges where there is no river, you should be very clear what exactly you demand. So the dynamic should change about leaders coming to listen to what aspirations citizens have, and then we make a choice depending on which leader we believe has the best idea to deliver my agenda. I think, unfortunately, the process is the other way around.
I see. Well, now we'll pause for a short break. We want to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now streaming on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa and watch our show live. And don't forget to share it with your friends. Also, we are on Twitter and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Africa Election. We'll put some of your tweets on air later in the show, and we'll be right back with you. So please, don't go away.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111, U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question, keep your comment brief, and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gidiyuwat, and of course this is Straight Talk Africa, coming to you live from Washington. Well, Arthur, I'm sorry that I had to interject because there is no democracy in Studio 52. When the producer says you have to go, you have to go.
Yeah, that's right.
I hope you'll find some space in your beautiful Ugandan heart and soul.
Yeah,
forgive me for that. Could you pick up from where you left, please, to complete your point?
Yeah. No, I think I pretty much made it. Essentially, unless people are prepared and understand what they want.
So we're talking about the need for civic education.
Absolutely, civic education, but a level of preparedness. You know? So if an election...
A playing field that is level.
Yeah, yeah. So even before the playing field, we need to be very clear on why we should have elections and contest between leaders, because all these are human beings. It's not a contest between an animal and a human being. So we all have flaws. So unless people in the village understand that my local council one chairperson, this is what I expect of them. I need better roads, I need a good health center, I need education for my children, I need inputs for agriculture. This is the substance that should define why I make a choice between options. And I think then, moving forward then, you should have a real choice, you know? Real choice and options. And this is why political parties, character of leaders, and all these become very, very important. Of course, you can have a very educated population, very much aware, and the process is still manipulated. And I think this is what my seniors have mentioned. Credibility is about transparency. It's about according space for everybody. It's about fair competition. But I think the foundation is what exactly citizens want for themselves and for the community in which they live.
Very interesting. What about, Senator, how important, for example, the institutions that conduct the election, especially in the manner in which those members that form the commission are chosen? How important is that? How important, for example, is also an independent judiciary? A judiciary, for example, that is not subordinate to the executive?
Well, the Independent Electoral Commission, I believe, is just in the name. Because he who pays the paper naturally dictates the tone.
Mm-hmm.
So the nominated members or selected members of the Independent Electoral Commission were facilitated by some interest group.
Right.
And depending on the integrity of those people and depending on the price tag, mm-hmm. because every human being has a price tag on his integrity.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on that, then we expect them to do what is right. But I want to say that even if we compose the Electoral Commission with the worst of the people you can think of, whether purchased or whatever, or picked from the gutter,
mm.
what is important is, what about the law we set out for ourselves?
Mm.
Are we ready to obey it?
Mm-hmm.
Do we understand why we are talking of election? Because those people, when you say, okay, fine, you have to do registration of voters,
mm-hmm.
and the registration of voters is rigged ab initio.
Correct.
You can blame that one on INEC. Independent Electoral Commission cannot be blamed for that. Then when you now go a bit further, and the people, I agree with my brother that the foundation is so important. Many of the people in Africa are still largely uneducated.
They are ignorant.
They are ignorant
especially
of their rights. They don't
their
know.
Rights.
Yes, they don't know what their right is. They don't even know what is contained in the constitution the government is operating. So by first of all enlightening them and then bringing them to terms with their rights.
Enlightening them? Who is supposed to do that?
Well, of course.
The government?
Not necessarily the government.
Civil society?
The civil society, the politician, the traditional institution, and all the stakeholders. You'll be your brother's keeper by making them to know that this is the importance of this thing. But beyond all these things we are talking is actually the issue of the gap between the ruling class and, of course, the people being ruled. Because when people are hungry,
mm-hmm.
when the poverty is so glaring,
mm-hmm.
and the gap between the haves and the have-nots
mm-hmm.
is just too much, then they cannot reason clearly. And it provides the opportunity for the sit-down syndrome, which is part of the cultural issue my brother from Uganda made mention of. Culturally, we are used to all these traditional rulers staying there for life.
Very, very interesting point, because the senator talks about...
When you now bring democracy to us,
right.
that's okay, come and elect your own representative rather than the usual sit down for life structure, then people are still not imbibing
and
the
tenets. You elect on what basis? Do you elect on the basis of the message or the messenger?
Well, it has to be the two, because the message is important if you can comprehend it. Then the messenger, if you are able to believe that this particular person would not deceive me, is having the fear of God in mind, is having the interest of the people at heart.
Mm-hmm.
Naturally, whatever he says, whatever he does, you believe him.
But Senator, what about, for example, the fact, frankly, that politicians, when they are campaigning for office, someone says they do that in prose. I mean, rather, they do that in poetry. They actually promise almost heaven on earth
demand.
And what have you. But when they come to the business of governing, someone says that one, in fact, is done in prose. They deal with the obtaining political reality. So why should we, in fact, believe the rhetoric of the politician who is running for office?
Well, it is actually difficult to put your hope on someone.
Mm-hmm.
You can't trust yourself.
Right.
The trust is just not there. And it's because over the time, things are degenerated to a very bad level.
Mm.
In the past, we had the Nyerere of Tanzania. We had Kwame Nkrumah of Ghana.
Mm-hmm.
We had the likes of Awolowo, the Azikiwe, and others in Nigeria.
Tule.
So many of these people, they meant well for their people.
They did.
they were not out to amass wealth.
The founding fathers.
Right. So a situation where things are degenerated to the level that those who are playing politics, their main concern is what they are going to get out of it.
Mm.
Not only what they are going to get out of it, we've heard of freedom fighters who later became president.
Right.
They went through the jungle. They put everything, their life at stake. Now, after getting into the power and they are aging, they started thinking on how their own children will replace them.
Were they, in fact, fighting to liberate people?
They are fighting for themselves, not for the people. That's what I'm dragging out.
Fighting for their stomach.
For their stomach, for the future of their children and their children alone.
Javez,
which is rather unfortunate.
Do you agree with him? In fact, he is saying that no politics supersedes the politics of the stomach.
I think he's 100% right. You see the politician talking, it is not the head or the mind, it is the stomach talking. That is number one. Number two, what we are talking about, the senator was talking about, and my friend Arthur, civic education of the population is important. But this can only happen when there is a goodwill in the government ruling the country at that time. It is not the case in most of the time.
Right.
We are now talking about democracy. Some of the people think it is elections or selection, as you say. I can even add rejection, because when they select, they reject many people who are competent. But my main point is that if there is no goodwill to say this is the government of the people, for the people, of the people, for the people, and by the people.
You're talking about democracy as defined by Abraham Lincoln?
Abraham Lincoln.
But what about others who say, in fact, there is also another type of democracy, which is of some people, by some people, for some people.
That is the case. Democracy of a clique, for the clique, and by the clique. And that is what is happening. Now, when you are talking about democracy, we have a new concept. People call it dictocracy.
Meaning?
Meaning it is an association and condensation of two words, dictatorship and democracy. Dictocracy. In French, you can say dictocracy or democrature. So, all those people that clique, they organize a show election. I mean, call it show election, call it rubber stamp election, because there is a need to show to the public, to the people, that they have a public legitimacy. But actually, it is not really election.
Can you give us some examples?
I take the example of Rwanda. What is going on now? Give me 1 second. We have seen the rally of President Kagame electoral campaign. Thousands of people waving.
Huge crowds. Yes.
If somebody doesn't know what is going on, you can say this guy is popular. It is not at all. It is not at all. What is going on is that those people are terrorized. They experience violence, intimidation, even assassination. Property destruction, legal tenders.
Do you have any do you have really any incontrovertible evidence on that? Not reliable to fault.
Yes, I do. I give you the example of the call Ingando or Itorero. It is a camp for indoctrination, for intimidation.
They could say politicization. What's wrong with politicizing your people?
You cannot imagine when you are calling the whole member of the press, journalist of private press, come attend that brush warning in uniform. In uniform, military uniform.
Unfortunately, the time happened not to be Abesalai. I will give you another moment for you to complete your thought later. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment, including our social media segment. So please, don't go away.
Today's youth are not just the next generation of African leaders. They are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them. Today, not tomorrow. So let's connect, let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies.
Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known.
It's Upfront every Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
This is Straight Talk Africa on The Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. It's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Ayen Bior. Take it away, Ayen.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Four African nations are set to hold elections in the next 5 months, starting with Rwanda on August 4th, followed by Kenya, Angola, and Liberia. This leads us to our question of the week, which asks, what actions should be taken to ensure that the electoral process of African nations is credible? Well, before we begin, I'd like to thank all our audience members for using our social media platforms to communicate with us. And another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Use the hashtag VOAAfricaElection. And if you haven't yet, please follow us at VOA Shaka. Speaking of it, let's go to a tweet from Prince Habat Nkula, who says, the army must be removed from politics. Deploying a full battalion in the name of incumbency should not be the way to go. We have another tweet from Upano Godfrey, who tweets, the commission members must not be appointed by the executive. They must be independent and people with high integrity. And now to a comment of the week from Facebook fan Omoni James in Nigeria, who has a different take. He says, having people with high moral values and high integrity is not enough because the Electoral Commission chairmen in our countries are appointed by the president. There will always be doubt about the credibility of our elections and a rigged vote in favor of the ruling party. I suggest that the heads of our electoral bodies should be appointed by the Judicial Council of our nations. Well, let's go to another comment from Facebook fan Mohamed Ahmed Mansour from Monrovia, Liberia. He writes, given the difficulties often related to the organization of elections in Africa, independent observation systems are essential to ensure the voting process is credible. Nonpartisan, domestic, and foreign election observers should provide an impartial assessment of the electoral process. Chief among these is the establishment of a truly independent and impartial electoral commission. Also, civil society groups should be active in issues ranging from voter education to the promotion of election dialogue and initiatives to defuse conflicts. And our last Facebook comment comes from Thelma Lutunga from Zambia. She writes, the answer to a credible electoral process is total transparency. Political parties should stop giving money and gifts to their supporters. Freedom of association during campaigns is vital to the democratic process. Candidates should talk about development to the voters. Stop the hate-based campaigns and be peaceful. Well, my thanks to everyone who sent in their comments and a reminder that we appreciate all of the audience feedback, so please keep them coming. And if you're a new fan, drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com or post your comments on our Facebook page. Enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Interact with our show as it's streaming live. And be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can simply join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV 2 Africa and follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Go to VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website. Or you can simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program. On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss Rwanda's August 4th presidential election. Incumbent Paul Kagame is widely expected to win another term. The amended constitution allows him to remain in power until 2034 if he pursues it. A preview of Rwanda's presidential election on the next Straight Talk Africa. Well, that's all for today's social media segment. Shaka, you and the guests have a lot of social media comments to talk about. Back to you.
Thank you very much, Ayen, for sharing some social media reaction with us. Today, we are talking, of course, about what it takes to hold a credible election in Africa whose results must reflect the will of the people. Our distinguished guest, Alhaji Benga Kaka, Nigerian Senator of Ogun State East and former Deputy Governor of Ogun State, Jarvis Chondo, former Rwandan Member of Parliament and diplomat, and Arthur Lalok, Democracy Fellow, National Endowment for Democracy, and Country Director of African Aid, Uganda. Well, gentlemen, once again, I have to say frankly that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. Well, Jarvis, of course, I had the dubious privilege of interjecting. I hope that you don't mind very much.
No.
Could you please pick up from where you left so you can complete your point?
Actually, I was trying to say that the ruling party in Rwanda, RPF, controls the whole life of the country.
What do you mean controlling the whole life? Are you suggesting that they control oxygen?
The whole aspect of life of the country. What do I mean? We have a structure called Nyumba Kumi. I think you speak Swahili.
Yes.
It means 10 houses.
10 houses.
The 10 houses, they are controlled by somebody.
That was not the invention. It's probably started in Libya's Gaddafi.
Exactly. But the copy and paste and even improved.
Mm-hmm.
Because any person who spent night in that place, there is a registry. You have to go to report to the responsible for that unit mm-hmm. that you have against. They have to know the movement of people who are coming, who are going. When the election comes, they know who is going to stay home. You better go with everybody.
So basically, what you are suggesting here, frankly, is that what we are seeing in Rwanda is not an election, but probably a military operation?
It is a military operation with the assistance of secret services. So, military operation, yes, you can say we had this constitutional coup when last December 2015, President Kagame decided to change the constitution, the articles 101 that article 101 that under no circumstances a person shall hold the president office for more than 2 terms.
So it was an entrenched clause.
It was an infringement to that article for the principle of democratic change of government.
But Jarvis, a constitution is a living document. It's not carved out of stone. It can be changed, especially through a referendum. And they went through a process which, on the surface at least, looks very legitimate.
That is what people don't understand. They are talking about the petition sent by the population
4.8 million people.
That is what I say.
How and only 10 people in the entire country of 11 people
you got it.
Had a different opinion.
You got it. That you is know, how a die-hard dictatorship works.
Come on, man. I mean, this man might in fact be more popular than Jesus Christ. Because I am sure that even Jesus Christ himself would probably not get that very, very high percentage.
I do agree with you. That is a die-hard dictatorship. That is the meaning of that. On the top of that, there was no single government that pointed an accusing finger to that constitutional coup. You have a body called the African Union.
But there is
a charter on democracy,
but
election.
But the process has in fact been endorsed by the African Union.
That is the worst.
And President Paul Kagame is expected to be the chairman of the African Union beginning next year in January.
You got it. That is the irony. And maybe we can pick up from there to see what is not going on in that body.
Tando,
you have that charter.
I think
charter on democracy, election, and governance.
I think that you made your point, Javez. Lalok, you've been listening, obviously, and waiting to weigh in. Why don't you weigh in? Because let's face it, there are also some people, in fact, who have been saying that a lot of these elections or selections in many African countries are not really organized for the benefit of the primary stakeholder, the people themselves, because the people in those countries are not citizens. They have no rights. They are actually subjects. But those elections, in fact, are conducted for the benefit of development partners. Any reaction?
Interesting. I think that I don't think the elections are held for outsiders, quite honestly. I've been part of several elections.
For the legitimacy.
Yeah. I do think that the lower you go with electoral processes, I think the tendency in our analysis often is to look at the big elections, president, member of parliament, and the like. I think there are several other elections that take place. Sometimes,
for example, which one?
Like at local council levels, at local council three levels in the case of Uganda, for instance. I think the lower you go in terms of leadership, in my view, the more credible they are. Because people are closer to that leader, is not moving from, you know, the capital and coming to persuade, but people see that as part and parcel of their life. They see a leader as part and parcel of their life. So I don't think, well...
So who controls the local government in Uganda? The last time I checked, frankly, everything is controlled by the National Resistance Movement.
Well, that is true, but the National Resistance Movement has people. I think Uganda suffers a similar problem like my senior colleagues have mentioned, which is a flawed process. But I am not saying I cannot agree with any argument that all is doom and gloom for Africa. I don't think so. I think there are spots.
Have we been having credible elections in Uganda?
Not from a macro level, I wouldn't say so. But this doesn't take us away from the reality that there have really been some spots of excellence that happened. There are moments when elections have been credible at different levels. Even when you look at our 2016 general election, of course, I didn't believe the results.
I was there.
Of course. Okay, so I think it was highly contested, the final result, but that doesn't invalidate everything that happened. I do think that some leaders were credibly elected, despite all the flaws. I think the two points I wanted to emphasize, one is the blame that sometimes we often give, you know, the victim mentality that we often put on many
victims.
Africans. You know, like, you are ignorant, you do not know what you want, you know. I think that's not absolutely true.
But are people, frankly, left with a choice?
Well,
because if we talk about ignorance, we would look at the largest democracy in the world, India. It has hundreds of millions of people who fit the category of not, frankly, having any information.
So let me...
And yet, there are elections, let's face it.
Very credible.
Let me complete my argument. My argument is, people are not stupid.
No.
They are not completely useless, primordial, not making sense of elections. Mm. They often vote. I actually think the election in 2016 in Uganda was a significant election where people spoke remarkably for change. It's just that that change was not delivered by the Electoral Commission.
What exactly do
so
you mean?
That doesn't
so are you
mean
suggesting that the final result that was announced for the Ugandans, in no way does it in fact reflect the will of the people?
In the case of the president, I would argue absolutely yes.
Where is your evidence?
Well, it is very difficult to generate a parallel tabulation system because we don't invest significantly in that. But I think the leading opposition in Uganda, opposition party in Uganda, has been demanding for an audit.
Correct.
An audit of the election. I think
correct.
If such an extensive audit was done, the truth would come.
Why wouldn't that happen? Because it has been done in Haiti. Mm-hmm. It has been done in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. It was done in Kosovo.
Well, there are many reasons why I think elections in Africa often take place with support of many players. I think the
for example,
international community, regional observers,
that's why
and the like.
I said there is a school of thought that suggests that these elections, a lot of these undemocratic elections, they are organized for the satisfaction of the development partners.
No, I don't agree.
Because they have to justify a way of continuing to deal with the government by giving them aid.
I do not agree. I do not agree because with or without development partners, elections will remain important in Uganda, in Africa, because it's a way in which we should express.
But how can they be important when, in fact, there are elections?
No, the point is, there are areas we need to improve. It doesn't invalidate the process. If you give birth to a disabled child, it doesn't become an animal.
Lalo,
it is still a child.
Lalo,
I think
look at the composition of the independent Uganda Electoral Commission.
You know what? All these are issues that can be sorted. I am not.
How come they have not been sorted yet?
Because of what my colleagues have mentioned, self-interest. I think there are three major problems with elections in Africa.
Mm.
The first one is self-interests that have hijacked the process. So you have leaders that are far from the desirable quality that we need and compromise everything. I think there are other structural problems about information. When a person goes to vote, are they prepared? Are they ready? Then there are other circumstances connected to the conduct, what we've been talking about, laws, legislation, and things like those. But I can never lose hope in the potential in Africans. You know why? I disagree with any argument that tends to blame victims, okay? That, well, it's because we are ignorant, it's because this is uncultured, it's because we've never done this, that, always blaming Africans.
No, it's not that. So, I think it is some people that hijack.
Yeah, I agree. So my point is, there are circumstances which can be put in place to make the real will of the framing you have had is excellent, because the will of the people is often stolen. So just to conclude.
So why does the international community in fact endorse those elections?
I think in many respects they have many interests why they do that, but I don't care too much what somebody thinks about my election. It is what I think and what I need to do to improve it. The international community, I think, cares less, really. Quite honestly, they have been in very many different countries.
There is a time I remember when the United States refused to recognize an election in Ukraine. And they said, you have to repeat.
Whether there is an election or not, the international community, depending on other interests, will be in a particular country. So the
look
most,
at Zimbabwe.
Yeah. They will be there, whether it's in Saudi Arabia, Zimbabwe, or Syria, or any. It is about interests of the international community. The point is, in Africa, we need to be very clear about what our interests are at local level, at individual level, and at collective level.
But what about the basics, really? I mean, come on, who constitutes the Electoral Commission?
Absolutely,
I agree. How should that be really decided? Because can you imagine an individual who chooses the membership of the Electoral Commission is also running in that election?
Yeah, that is
such... somebody actually changes a constitution that in fact reflects his personal or political interests.
Yeah, that is a complete...
And gets away with it.
Yeah, complete misnomer, like all my seniors have articulated. Okay, I agree with that. But the most important point is we cannot give up as a people because there is evidence that we can actually vote for change. There is evidence that we can actually deliver victory. The most recent by-election in Uganda, by-election, you know, the constituency election of a member of parliament, okay? The main opposition party had its candidate. The NRM with the president of Uganda had its candidate. They campaigned for those candidates, but a musician who connects with people.
Bobby Wine.
Yes, Bobby, who reflects the ideals of people succeeded. That is a good example of how, despite fraud, you can actually still succeed.
The National Resistance Movement really didn't have to worry about that because, after all, they have a huge number in parliament to pass any bill into law anytime they want, even if they are sleeping.
If they didn't care, the president would not be campaigning there. If they didn't care, in fact, President Museveni, in one of his post-election victories, post-election speeches, not victory, post-election speeches, did indicate that one of his goals is to completely obliterate the opposition by 2021. So if that was his objective in going for the by-election, he didn't succeed. So I think it's possible to build. It's possible to build on some positive impulses in
Africa. Thank you very much. Let's go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good evening, Richard from Uganda. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Richard, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Shaka. Good evening. How are you, Shaka?
Usually terrific. What is your question, please?
Okay, I don't have a question, though I have a comment or two comments to make.
One, please.
Actually,
time is not our best ally. Can you make one?
Okay, Shaka.
Thank you.
In Africa, it's only, I think, West Africa and Southern Africa who have come out with a smooth transition in terms of elections and handing over power. This is the place where incumbents have been won, and we are surprised.
I'm afraid we just lost Richard from Uganda. Good evening, Kennedy from South Africa. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Kennedy, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, please. What is your question, sir?
My question is about the elections in Africa. I will just concentrate on Rwanda. I just regard Rwanda to be North Korea. Can you have a credible election in North Korea? The answer is no. How can you have the chairperson of the National Electoral Commission, who is a card member holder of RPF, and he said that he will be a fair chairperson of the National Electoral Commission? Thirdly, how can you have a fair election in a militarized society where even kids last week, Yoshua Kagame was showing the kid, training them how to shoot. These are younger kids of 15, 16 year old, you know?
Thank you.
There is no credible election in Rwanda at all. We will not have any election as long as Kagame or Rwanda is still ruled militarily. Thank you.
You're most welcome. In fact, in Rwanda, you had this beautiful, young, smart lady, Diane, who wanted to compete in the elections, but for some strange reason, the Electoral Commission simply said she couldn't gather the 600 votes in order for her to qualify as a presidential candidate. And even if she did, by the way, you only have 3 weeks from the opposition in order to contest the presidency, when President Kagame has actually been campaigning for the last more than 20 years.
Yeah. No, that is terrible. That is terrible. It was not only Diana Rwigara. There was also another guy, Gilbert Mwenedata.
But why is there an election in Rwanda anyway? I mean, no. President Kagame has already said that the people in 2015 spoke when they came up with the petition of changing the constitution. It's only 10 people, 10 people that you may have to persuade to vote for you. So why are you even taking the country and the world through motions, really? These are just taking people in motion, through motions, really. There's no election.
Shaka, you are
at a cost.
Every cost.
And how much does it cost to the normal citizen? How many people are, signed to pay for the contribution for this election, to pay monthly from their salary?
What about the fact that in most of these countries, by the way, there is no separation, frankly, of the ruling party and the state? No. The two are fused. So you don't even have somebody whom you could call, in fact, a member of the Rwandan police or a member of the Ugandan police. You have, in fact, probably a member of the ruling party's police. So almost everybody really is part of the ruling party, correct?
Corruption.
And
you
using
have
state resources?
Yes.
Essentially using really the state budget.
Right.
Very interesting. So what are the solutions?
I think that despite the sorry state, we find our electoral. I think if we present arguments as if nothing is positive.
There is something.
The choice.
And probably and through presented the changing demographics.
Correct.
The young people.
Absolutely.
And the proliferation of the social media.
Correct. So this, I think there are victories that have been recorded despite all these problems. I don't think that if you are then to weigh the argument between all this whole process of fraudulent and so we should not have an election, I think that's not an option.
If you have to have elections, you should have an election.
Yeah, absolutely. But, and I think the thing is that this is a journey. It's a process and we learn.
Let me ask you the final question. Let me name a country which is about to have an election and tell me what you think in one or two words. Angola. Are they elections or what? Angola.
Well,
Eduardo José dos Santos has been in power since 1979.
And he said he's stepping down.
He's stepping down, but my friend, the MPLA is subordinate, the state is subordinate to the MPLA. He's going to be chairman of the party.
Well, I would paraphrase it in this way, that nobody oppresses you and get away without oppression, without your consent.
Good. Go, Kenya. So, Kenya, is this election? Well,
In case of Kenya,
definitely,
the people gave their consent. I'm sorry to say, in the sense that we had Jomo Kenyatta when I was talking about freedom fighters. Then we have Odinga Odinga.
Mm-hmm.
And their children are the ones still rallying around with the consent of the people.
Very interesting.
Then when you now talk, like my friend said,
unfortunately,
you cannot give a blanket condemnation.
Unfortunately,
if you look at what happened in Gambia.
I have to go. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Alihaji Benga Kaka, Javez Chondo, and Arthur Lalok. Thanks to our field stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, Today Break Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not beta, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.